Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. It's that time of year. In fact, it's that day in New York State where the legislature is in its final scheduled 24 hours before lawmakers are supposed to leave the Capitol and return to their districts for the remainder of the year. And there is, as there usually is, last day drama. By way of background, some accomplishments this session include the passage of legislation proposed by Governor Cuomo, which will raise the age at which one can consent to marriage in New York. And Mayor de Blasio will get more speed cameras in school zones, a piece of his Vision Zero street safety program that for some reason the entire state legislature has to approve. But a few big ticket items remain outstanding, like will the mayor get another year to control the New York City school system, even one more year? What will be done to curb the growing MTA repair crisis? A new bill is proposing a new tax as a special dedicated fund. What about ethics reform in the scandal-plagued legislature? Ha ha ha, that's going to be a short part of the conversation. And joining me now to discuss the status of the negotiations in Albany before the state legislature gavels to a close, they sometimes call the final catch-all bill this time of year, the big ugly, is not ugly. Ben Max, executive editor, fairly big, but not ugly. Ben Max, executive editor of the Gotham Gazette. Welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
Why is mayoral control become such a big flashpoint?
Partly because there's a lot of politics involved. The mayor came into office in 2014 feeling really big in his britches, and he tried to take out Senate Republicans in Albany and flip the chamber to Democrats so that Albany would have all Democratic control. That failed fairly miserably, caused all sorts of problems. And since then, Senate Republicans have really had it out for him, and they use mayoral control of schools as sort of the biggest pawn in that political game. There's one other aspect, though. Senate Republicans have a different educational philosophy in some ways than the mayor. They believe more in charter schools. It's a bit ironic since they mostly represent districts outside of New York City that don't have a lot of charter schools.
And that's the sticking point at the policy level, right? They want a higher cap on the number of charter schools in New York City, and the mayor isn't willing to give it. The assembly speaker, Carl Hastie, on the mayor's behalf, isn't willing to give it. Is it a matter of numbers? Can they just sort of, okay, you want 53, we want 107, let's call it 78 and go home, something like that?
Sort of. So the charter cap is actually something that Assembly Democrats are more opposed to than the mayor, I think. I think at this point, Mayor de Blasio sort of resigned. He's been sort of beaten back on charters, in part by Governor Cuomo, who supports charter schools.
Uh-huh.
So the mayor, I think, is a bit resigned. I think he'd sign off on an extension of the charter cap, which, by the way, the city hasn't hit. There's still room for more charters in New York City. Senate Republicans are just looking to get something out of a deal here for mayoral control. And so they're saying, well, let's lift the cap now. And it's also worth pointing out that people who support charter schools are very generous donors to state Senate Republicans. And, you know, they're very much looking to the next elections, and they have a very slim majority in the Senate. So there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of politics at play here as well.
Are there numbers? Are there numbers you can say, like, they want the charter cap to be X, they want the charter cap to be Y? How about X plus Y divided by 2?
Right. So basically, the Senate passed three different bills that extends mayoral control for different amounts of time, for different increases in the charter cap. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but the basic gist is they're willing to make all sorts of deals, which again also is a fascinating aspect of the question of, so do you really have issues with the structure of mayoral control, or are you just looking to sort of make a deal?
They are just sort of looking to make a deal.
Basically.
And they have
questions about the mayor's governance.
And I'm just trying to figure out, and maybe you can't figure it out because maybe it's all in the between the lines tea leaves, how close they are to a deal. Because this isn't, you know, a big moral question of should abortion be legal or not? Should gay marriage be legal? Should somebody be impeached? This is how many charter schools should be allowed in New York City.
Right.
So How close are they to a deal? Because this is just about a number.
My reading of the tea leaves is that there's going to be a deal. I think everybody, I was in Albany for the day yesterday. I think everybody sort of wants to get out of there at the end of the day today. And one of the reasons I think Senate Republicans will make a deal is because they don't want to sort of have this hanging over them, be dragged back to Albany. You know, they don't know exactly what could happen coming out of this if there's no deal in terms of the bad PR for them. So I think they want to make a deal. I think the Assembly will make a deal to give in on a slight raise to the charter cap. But as it is with Albany, you never know. I do think, though, a deal will come together probably tonight, maybe in the next day or two.
I don't know if anybody wants to call in with a memory of life before mayoral control, because this isn't about de Blasio, really. This is about a way of running the New York City public schools. There were 32 separate public school districts in the city before Mayor Bloomberg got control in 2002. Mayoral control had been seen as a good governance of the public school issue across party lines for a long time. Bloomberg finally won it because a lot of the old districts, or at least a few and enough to be a concern of the old districts, were corrupt, literally corrupt, in the way that superintendents were appointed, sometimes principals were appointed. This just wasn't good for the kids. So if they don't reach an agreement, the city could go back to that old governance system. New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farinas spoke about what that might look like earlier this week.
You're talking about a lot of extra money in the billions of dollars because they will need offices, elections, all the things that we did in the past. And by the way, in school board elections in the past, less than 1% of the voters voted.
32 school boards elected by voters locally in historically low turnout elections. I remember when we were covering those elections and hardly anybody votes. One good thing about those old school board elections, anybody with a child in the school could vote in them. So it didn't matter what your immigration status was. If you had a stake in that school by being a parent, you could vote. Problem was, hardly anybody did. And so the school board elections became places where people with personal interests or other kinds of special interests could get a leg into politics. And that's one of the reasons that it's not considered good to have 32 neighborhood school boards and that kind of decentralized control in New York City. Anybody remember that system, who was involved with it, who wants to talk about it, since we're on the verge of going back to it, potentially? The good and the bad. Some people like decentralized education and would like to see 32 school districts again. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Ben Max from Gotham Gazette. We'll get into other issues, too, and we'll ask if anybody would want to see a new, in effect, commuter tax for people in the general MTA region because of all the transit problems and the repairs that are needed. That's a kind of newish thing on the table in Albany right now. But, Ben, is anybody actually making the case that going back to 32 separate school districts, not under the control of the mayor, would be better for the kids, especially in the lower income districts in New York City, who arguably suffered the most under the old system? Is John Flanagan, the Senate Republican leader, who's from Long Island, not the city, or anybody standing up on the Senate floor and say, you know, we're better off with 32 school districts because, well, as Republicans, we think education is local?
No. There's really no major voice arguing for that. Even Senator Flanagan has said he believes in mayoral control. But again, he has expressed some issues with the way that Mayor de Blasio is executing it. Many Senate Republicans were much more in favor of Mayor Bloomberg's type of governance of the schools, more modeled on school choice, not that friendly with the teachers union, closing schools more quickly, more friendly to charter schools. So they want to see sort of a different type of mayor in the mayoral control. But as a governance structure, you almost find nobody willing to stand up and say we should go back. The only people that are close to that are actually some Democrats who want more localized control. Some of that has to do with the teachers union, which has not been that supportive of mayoral control, but sort of begrudgingly put out a statement the other day. They weren't at the mayor's rally. They were very noticeably absent, but they put out a statement, the UFT, saying this isn't even something we should be debating right now. You don't need the UFT here. Mayoral control should be extended.
And there is actually a pendulum that has swung over the decades about which is better to have, centralized control or decentralized control for education. There was a teacher strike way back in 1969 over this issue, and it was considered a black empowerment movement. Local leaders in Ocean Hill and Brownsville in particular wanted local control. They didn't want the white establishment telling the, you know, black kids how they had to get educated, and felt that the white establishment was failing the mostly black kids in that district. And then the movement was for local empowerment. And they got it to some degree. But then local empowerment, for various other reasons, had all kinds of problems. And then the pendulum swung back to, oh, no, we need centralized control so somebody's accountable who's not as likely as some local official might be to be corrupted. And then we got mayoral control in 2002.
Yes.
So the pendulum does swing.
And the mayor,
but that's not the conversation they're having in Albany today.
And just lastly on this, you know, the mayor you mentioned before, sort of access and local politics as part of these school boards. That's part of how Mayor Bill de Blasio got going in his political career at the local school board level. And even he has long said mayoral control is a good answer. And he has pointed to accomplishments like the fast and fairly successful, highly successful rollout of universal pre-K is one of the things that was only possible because you have mayoral control.
All right, let's move on to some other things. The mayor's speed cameras legislation did pass through committee yesterday. What does that mean for the city? The mayor wants more speed cameras, and especially in school zones, 150 total over the next 3 years, a piece of his Vision Zero street safety program.
Right. So I wrote for 2 days ago, you know, sort of that there's more than mayoral control. The mayor has other priorities. And pretty high on the list is getting 150 more speed cameras for school zones. I believe they already have about 150 that they were able to install. Again, as you pointed out in the open, it's remarkable that they have to ask the state legislature and the governor for permission to do this in the city, but that's the structure.
And on mayoral control of public schools, too, for that matter, because I don't think it affects people in Nassau or Westchester or up in Onondaga County who controls the schools within the city of New York, the mayor or local districts. It doesn't matter at all. This shouldn't even be in Albany's control, but that's another story.
Right. Home rule issues are huge in New York. There's a lot of antecedents to this discussion that we can touch on another time.
So but who's against speed cameras in school zones?
Largely, it's legislators that have lots of drivers in their districts who get very upset when they get speeding tickets. So you have some legislators in Brooklyn and Queens, especially Staten Island for sure, who don't want what they see as speed traps. So one of the deals here is that the mayor's team and their legislative allies who have actually sponsored the bills in Albany have adapted the bill to go down to 150 cameras and only 50 per year over 3 years. And they've also agreed that they would put up more signage to tell drivers, hey, you're entering a school zone with speed cameras, and that's sort of a concession to some of the legislators that are hesitant about this. So that seems to have some movement. It made it through committees in the assembly yesterday. I was talking with Department of Transportation Commissioner Polly Trottenberg in Albany. She seemed optimistic. She was sent there, you know, by the mayor to talk to legislators about Vision Zero and about the speed cameras.
So
that's moving ahead. Speed cameras is moving ahead. It's not done. It's not a done deal yet, but it looks promising that the mayor will get to implement more speed cameras in school zones. That's one of the things he sent his transportation commissioner to Albany for. The other one is design build, which we can get into if you'd like.
Now, Governor Cuomo announced yesterday through a press release a new bill to grant him more control over the MTA. Doesn't the governor already have essentially total control over the MTA because he gets to appoint the majority of the MTA board?
Well, you shouldn't say majority because he has the most appointees. He has 6 out of 14. It's more than anybody else. But because there's 4 to the mayor and then you have 1 in different areas that are affected in the MTA zone, different counties get to nominate 1 each. He has more than anybody else, but he doesn't have the majority. So what he's putting forward is majority appointments to the governor. It's a distinction without much of a difference. The governor, in effect, controls the MTA. He names the chair. The MTA almost never bucks something the governor wants to do. But, you know, it's the difference between de facto and de jure, and he wants legally to control the board. So he's put that forward at the 11th hour here. It's a fairly typical Governor Cuomo move in that we're late in the session. Instead of pushing forward other things that he's been behind before, he's sort of putting something new forward that addresses a crisis. He is getting to show leadership here in some way. But as you said, many people are scratching their heads and saying, you already have control of the MTA. You should have been working on the nuts and bolts issues here for a long time.
And since the MTA is having so many problems, why does he even want more control on paper? It seems like most of what the governor has been saying recently has been to say Mayor de Blasio is more responsible than de Blasio is acknowledging for the problems with the subways, at least the subways within the city limits. You know, Long Island Railroad and Metro North is another story. Why does the governor want more blame to come down on him for what is a bad time in transit right now?
I think there's no way that the governor can sort of get out from the blame. So he's now saying, give me full control or at least majority control, and I'll be able to move things along faster because that's sort of his brand.
Is there any content attached to that? Like if I had all the control I wanted for the MTA, there would be fewer delays on the F train because?
Well, he's pointed to, as he often does on things, that bureaucracy is sort of dysfunctional, and it's the decentralization of power in some ways is making things more choppy. Now, the governor gets to appoint the MTA chair. He's left that position without a full-time nominee for several months now. There's a temporary person in place since the former chair stepped down. So there's lots of issues with sort of the political move that the governor is putting forward here. One thing that, you know, some people have speculated is that for the governor to now say this, he can sort of wash his hands with blame leading up to this point. He can say, well, I haven't really been in control. And that's sort of the rhetorical game that he's playing. Most people who pay attention sort of see through that, except as you point out, lots of New Yorkers think the mayor controls the subways.
Wrongly think the mayor controls the subways. And I know when the mayor comes on for the weekly Ask the Mayor segment, especially these days when transit is top of mind for a lot of people and the problems that we've been having with subways, people call up over and over and over and over again and say, Mr. Mayor, what are you going to do about the subways? And he says every week, and I reinforce it because it's true, the mayor doesn't have control over what happens in the subways, has some influence because he gets to appoint a small number of the members of the MTA board, but certainly does not call the shots. And yet that doesn't sink in because people associate the subways as a city thing, and so they think the mayor is in control.
And talk about mayoral control of schools. You know, there's been discussion recently about mayoral control of the subways. It would get very tricky because the MTA does extend beyond the city limits, and there's a lot of questions around that. But it's a fairly worthwhile discussion about whether maybe the mayor of New York City should have control over the subway
system. Is de Blasio asking for it?
No. He's saying, I don't really want it, but if that's what people want to do, I would sort of entertain the idea. I don't think he wants to touch that at all. There are some city council candidates lately, I've noticed, who are sort of talking about that as a solution, but I don't see that happening. But the mayor could do more on the MTA. He's been a very quiet, you know, other than pointing to the state, he's been very quiet on this.
True.
He doesn't really ride the subways often. I've been saying for a while, I can't believe he's sort of letting this political moment go by. When those folks were trapped on that F train, the next morning he should have been at that Broadway Lafayette stop having a press conference and saying, we need immediate action now. But he sort of let that moment go by.
Yeah. And I've been saying that to the mayor in these exchanges with the listeners where they say, you should do something about the subways. And he says, I don't have control of the subways. And I say, that's right. He doesn't have control of the subways. But, Mr. Mayor, why aren't you bellyaching more to Albany? Why aren't you being, you know, that out front leader of the movement of city dwellers' discontent with how the MTA is being run, and, you know, lead a march? You can take an SUV or whatever to the state capitol and say, Governor Cuomo, Andy, do something.
Nobody has a bully pulpit like the mayor of New York City. Maybe the president might be the only person in the country with more of a bully pulpit than the mayor of New York City. And the mayor hasn't really used it on this issue. He's come around a little bit more. But again, just like the governor, he's been sort of late to see this build. The other thing at play here, of course, is the relationship between the two. And some of the mayor's political opponents in the mayoral race are pointing to this and saying if the mayor had a better relationship with the governor, this might have been moving forward. Mm-hmm. Now, we've gone over this many times, and we don't necessarily want to put the blame on the mayor for this more than the governor, because I think that would be bad analysis for sure.
I think they both agree that there's not enough money in the system to do the maintenance and repair work that needs to be done at the pace at which it needs to be done to keep up with the need. Now I understand there's another bill being introduced to try to get more money into the system that would draw from people in the entire MTA region, introduced by, I think, Assemblyman Michael...
Senator Gennaris.
Yep.
Senator Michael Gennaris from Queens has put forward a last-minute bill right before the governor put forward his that would institute an additional millionaire's tax on people in the MTA region, only a three-year dedicated tax to bring in money for only repairs to the system. And he also, his bill would mandate an emergency manager to just tackle emergency repairs. Just like the governor's bill, this is very last minute in Albany, although many things get done last minute in Albany. His additional tax is a non-starter with the Senate GOP and with the governor, so that's not going to happen. But as he put it, somebody had to do something. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to start the conversation, and right. I think Gennaris is correct on that.
He's got an interesting model that also recalls some relatively ancient New York City history. In 1990, when the murder rate hit its peak in New York City, then City Council Speaker Peter Vallone spearheaded a move for a temporary tax increase to build up the police force. Those who remember the Dinkins administration might remember that was called the Safe Streets, Safe City Plan. And it was really a Vallone initiative. It was a city council initiative primarily, and Mayor Dinkins signed on to it. And it was a temporary tax so that they could staff up the police department. And that buildup of the police department is credited by criminal justice experts as the beginning of the end of the rising murder rate. And then techniques came in and Bratton, and that was later. But just having more police officers on the street, and to this day, former Mayor Dinkins takes credit for having signed on to Safe Streets, Safe City and built up the police force and started to bring down the crime rate. And that was funded by a temporary tax for what the public was able to rally around as an emergency short-term need in the city. Gennaris is saying, we are there now with respect to transit repairs, but he has to convince people other than city dwellers.
And that's part of the reason there's not enough time here to make this happen before the end of legislative session. You know, if you put forward this additional millionaire's tax with a dedicated revenue stream and you get business leaders, you know, you get the Partnership for New York City, Association for Better New York, you know, some of these groups that advocate for business and for wealthier New Yorkers, if you got them behind you and say, yeah, we want to, our members and the people we employ at the highest levels want to pay more to fix the subway situation immediately because it's the lifeblood of our businesses, you might have something there. Because those are the people Governor Cuomo listens to a lot as well.
We have three teachers or retired teachers calling in to say, you know, local control of the schools was actually a pretty good thing. So let's take one of those to represent the group. Norm in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Norm, thank you for calling.
Brian, I spent 35 years working in Williamsburg section of Brooklyn teaching elementary school. That was District 14. It was I want to be clear that I was an opponent, one of the people who opposed the people running that district, but I and others and parents had an opportunity every month to go to a local school board meeting in the neighborhood and lodge our complaints. We had opportunities to organize in school board elections. It was a route for every single neighborhood for the school. Now it's somewhat chaotic. Was there corruption? Yes, there probably was some corruption. There was some job issues, but that pales in comparison to the amount of money that has been wasted under mayoral control, scandal after scandal, with massive contracts. I'll bet if someone added up I remember the big story was one school board member took home a piano from the school. It was like a big scandal. I mean, you ever tried to play one of those pianos? People, you couldn't throw those away. And so every little incident was magnified and turned into an attack on local control. And despite my problems with the school district, I felt my district was pretty well run. The school was stable. They put in people. They didn't want to put in people who couldn't run a school. And I felt the teaching staff was stable. I mean, I was 27 years in one school. I mean, you look at the chaos that goes on now as people moving from school to school. And so I believe mayoral control has been a disaster. We have had 15 years of it. And the other thing to point out is that the corruption of that system was being fixed. It was a 1996 law which took away some of the powers of the local school board to appoint bad superintendents, and it gave the power to the chancellor. The other thing, by the way, is that the high schools were never decentralized. This was only a K-8 system.
That's right.
And so, if we revert to the old system, which I'm rooting for, after having worked under both, the mayor still gets two appointees instead of what he currently has to a board of education. The borough president still appoint one person, as they always have.
Right.
And so the mayor had the ability through political to really, they always controlled the high schools. And I believe that having local school board elections in the current times would turnout would be higher. And I think we would find ways to put curbs on the local interests and the local political machines, which can be done with the proper law, prevent the local Democratic or the parties in Staten Island, the Republican Party, from controlling those school boards. Well, I think we would have a better system, fairer to everybody.
Norm, I'm curious, what do you think would happen with the charter school debate in a local control system, where there would be 32 neighborhood debates about how many charter schools to allow?
You just nailed one of the biggest corruption issues, the charter schools. I mean, why is it not corrupt for the charter schools to buy so many politicians and hold the power to force charter schools into every neighborhood which doesn't want them? I'm still in touch with people in Williamsburg, and they don't want those charters. You know, and if they had the local say, the charters would run into a brick wall, which is why you will never see a return to local control. The charters will blink first if they had to. They will take no more expansion of charter schools under the threat of local control, which would really create a barrier to them.
That is so interesting. Norm, I really appreciate your call. Thank you for chiming in. Well, that's fascinating. And that's not the conversation they're having in Albany. It's worth saying again, they're using mayoral control and the possible expiration of mayoral control as a bartering chip, ironically, to lift the cap on charter schools. I don't know if there's any way to know if Norm's scenario would actually play out, but maybe if there were 32 local school boards in control of K or pre-K to 8 education, there would actually be more resistance to charter school expansion in New York City than there is under the centralized system.
I think there very well could be, because you'd have, again, a lot of what Norm pointed to in terms of opposition to charter schools or welcoming charter schools, also how the local district is run. That's very neighborhood by neighborhood, community by community. So his experience wasn't necessarily what others experienced, of course. And also the same thing is true for charter schools. There are communities in the city that want more charter schools, that have dozens and want more. And you speak to legislators, even Democrats, who say the schools haven't been good enough for a long time. These charter schools are coming in and giving us cleaner, choice, better options, yeah, better run. So that's part of the equation there as well. One thing Norm hit on is the contracting issue. And this is actually something that's come up quite a bit lately, even from Comptroller Stringer and some city council members saying that the contracting process through the Department of Education is not transparent enough, doesn't have enough public checks and balances. So that's actually still a very relevant piece of the debate, while some of the other aspects here are probably foregone conclusions.
Huh. We just have a few minutes left with Ben Max, editor of Gotham Gazette, as we talk about what is supposed to be the final day of the legislative session for 2017 in the New York State Legislature in Albany. This is a part-time legislature. This legislature goes home, maybe today. They can always be called back by the governor for a special session if the governor feels there's a need. But they go home from today until January. So whatever doesn't get done today, unless the governor sees it necessary to call a special session, this is it for 2017. So What haven't we talked about yet that hangs in the balance?
Well, I would just point, since you know we're obviously New York City focused, there's a couple of priorities of the mayor's administration that they want to see go through. One is this design build permission to use design build contracting so that you're not contracting out for the design of a big infrastructure project and then the build. It saves a lot of time and money. The state has been using it on some big projects. The governor loves it, but they haven't given the city permission to use it. The city wants to use it initially on 8 projects. They've delineated those. There seems to be some movement on that. One other thing I'll point to that the city wants to see that's also moving is raising the cap on what they're allowed to without a competitive bidding process given contracts to minority and women-owned businesses. The city wants to raise the cap on that to about $150,000, if I'm not mistaken, to be able to use that. And electoral reform and ethics reform, which you hinted at the beginning, there's nothing happening on those, so we don't have too much to discuss there.
And I want to mention the single-payer healthcare bill, which has passed the Assembly and which I gather has either enough or one shy of enough votes to pass the state Senate. I gather this is not being seen as something that actually has a chance of passage today before adjournment. But if the ACA goes down in Washington, and that's going to be another segment we'll do in a little while with Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor in the Nation, the secret Senate health care bill and what that may result in, if the ACA goes away in a meaningful sense, then do we have a live issue about whether to create a single-payer New York statewide healthcare system?
I think we might eventually. It might not be taken up, as you noted, until next year. But something I would say to watch for, and again, this is not something that has come from the governor's office, but I did talk with someone at the Democratic National Committee who is looking at Governor Cuomo as a potential 2020 presidential candidate, and he said, how can the governor think about running if he doesn't have his sort of Democratic house in order, referring to the IDC and not having a Senate Democratic majority? And we were talking about the possibility of next year, the governor making that happen, figuring out a way, and then maybe taking up an issue like single-payer health care to, again, build his national Democratic bona fides. We'll have to see what happens in Washington first.
Last thing, this bill that passed to raise the age of legal consent for marriage in New York State. People who are involved in that issue feel very strongly about it. Most people don't know about this issue. What was or what is the legal age for marriage in New York State?
It was actually 14, I believe, and they've now raised it to 18, although you can do it at 17 if you have parental and judicial approval. Mm-hmm. So it was seemed to be, I don't know exactly where the groundswell was on this, but it seemed to be something that grabbed the governor's attention and that got pushed through the legislature. But you used to be able to, before this law, get married at 14 in New York.
Were there sort of underground arranged marriages of girls? And so it was a kind of, you know, abuse of teenage girls based on the power of men who, for whatever reason, had the power to marry them or something like that?
I think a little bit, but I have not seen the data on this to prove that this was a huge pressing issue. I don't think anybody would disagree that 14 is probably a little young to be getting married and consenting. Exactly. You know, we don't say that 14, 15, 16 is adult consent for just about anything. So that, you know, certainly there's questions there, but I haven't seen really the data on why it was taken up as a big priority, but I don't think too many people are arguing with the fact that they got it done.
Ben Max, editor of the Gotham Gazette. We will see what happens in Albany today. Thank you very much for all your background.
My pleasure.